Well, good morning. I don't know about you, but yesterday I was out and about, and I really felt like I started getting hot in my car, and I thought, this is an unusual feeling. And then I looked at my mirror, and it has the temperature, and it was still below freezing, but I thought, boy, this is bad when I think it's below freezing, and I think it's nice and warm outside, and I need to start taking off layers. And well, a couple weeks ago, I was reading an article on a periodical called Psychology Today, which I'm sure all of you just avidly read all the time, and it was called Self-Care, 12 Ways to Better Take Care of Yourself. And so the person who wrote the article is about as creative as I am when it comes to writing things, so it's about 12 ways to better take care of yourself. And so I thought the fifth way listed is something that would fit well with the sermon, at least one of the ideas that I'm talking about today. It was this. It says, learning to say no is really hard. Many of us feel obligated to say yes when somebody asks for our time or our energy. But if you're already stressed or overworked, saying yes to loved ones or coworkers can lead to burnout, anxiety, and irritability. It may take a little practice, but once you learn how to politely say no, you'll start to do so, and you'll have more time for your own self-care. So to summarize that, basically, if your family's wearing you out, just say no to your family, or just say no to your friends. This is kind of the idea that's going on. Now, if you have a family, you know that family can be demanding, right? Those of you who have children know this better than Crystal and I, and we're working on this, but children are demanding. If you're married, that takes some of your time and some of your energy, and so there is a point where you have to make sure that you're taking care of yourself. There is a point where if you're not sleeping, you're not eating because you're busy taking care of everybody else, doing things, then you need to do that. But the reality is what I've seen more in our society is not that our society has a problem with self-care, but rather that people neglect their family for the excuse of self-care, but really it's become self-centeredness. And that's the problem that we face, that husbands won't take care of their families or don't want to have anything to do with them because self-care, they need to go off and do their hobby, they need to watch the ball game, or they need to do whatever it is they're doing. And mothers and wives neglect their family because, you know, they need self-care and they need to go off and do what they want to do. And so there is an element, there does need to be a boundary where we take care of ourselves, but what we're going to talk about today is how much of our own happiness, how much of our own dreams do we need to give up for the sake of our family? How much is too much? Where's the line? And so we'll be looking at that from Ruth today. So as I promised last week, we're going back. We're going to be in Ruth chapter 3. So if you want to turn in your Bibles there, we'll look at that. There's 3 points I'll be talking about today. And I'm just going to start reading our passage. I'm going to read all of Ruth chapter 3. Just at the start, and it's on the screens behind me. Ruth chapter 3 says this. Then Naomi, her mother-in-law, said to her, "My daughter, should I not seek rest for you that it may go well with you? Is not Boaz our relative with whose young women you were? See, he is winnowing his barley tonight at the threshing floor. Wash, therefore, and anoint yourself, and put on your cloak and go down to the threshing floor. But do not make yourself known to the man until he has finished eating and drinking. But when he lies down, observe the place where he lies. Then go, uncover his feet, and lie down, and he will tell you what to do." And she replied, "All that you say I will do." So she went down to the threshing floor and did just as her mother-in-law had commanded her. And when Boaz had eaten and drunk, and his heart was merry, he went to lie down at the end of the heap of grain. Then she came softly and uncovered his feet and lay down. At midnight, the man was startled and turned over, and behold, a woman lay at his feet. And he said, "Who are you?" And she answered, "I am Ruth, your servant. Spread your wings over your servant, for you are a redeemer." And he said, "May you be blessed by the Lord, my daughter. You have made this last kindness greater than the first, in that you have not gone after the young men, whether poor or rich. And now, my daughter, do not fear. I will do for you all that you ask, for all my fellow townsmen know that you are a worthy woman. And now it is true that I am a redeemer, and yet there is a redeemer nearer than I. Remain tonight, and in the morning, if he will redeem you, good. Let him do it. But if he is not willing to redeem you, then as the Lord lives, I will redeem you. Lie down until the morning." So she lay at his feet until the morning, but arose before one could recognize another. And he said, "Let it not be known that the woman came to the threshing floor." And he said, bring the garment that you are wearing and hold it out. So she held it, and he measured out 6 measures of barley and put it on her. Then she went into the city. And when she had come to her mother-in-law, she said, how did you fare, my daughter? Then she told her all that the man had done for her, saying, these 6 measures of barley he gave to me, for he said to me, you must not go back empty-handed to your mother-in-law. She replied, wait, my daughter, until you learn how the matter turns out, for the man will not rest, but will settle the matter today. Now, we kind of got out of order, so last week we saw how the matter was settled and how Boaz redeemed Ruth, and that this redeemer that was nearer than Boaz ended up not redeeming Ruth, so we kind of got out of order and you kind of know how all of that ended. But I wanted to kind of focus on a problem, a solution, and an application that we see here. And the problem is this, that when we have a family, we're all going to have hopes and dreams that we want to pursue instead of sacrificing for our family. We're all going to have hopes and dreams that we as individuals, whether you're the husband, wife, children, you're each going to have things that you want to pursue instead of sacrificing for the family. Instead of loving your family, you're going to want to pursue other things. Now, it's not wrong to have hopes and dreams and have things that you chase after, and those things are good unless they're sinful things that you're chasing after. But if you have hopes and dreams, you have things that you like to do, there's nothing wrong with pursuing those. But inevitably, when you have a family, the problem is going to come up where your desires, your hopes and dreams, or whatever you want to do is in conflict with what the family needs or what the family wants and what they desire. And so you're going to have to pick and choose. Do I pursue what I want to do or what my dream is or what my desire is, or do I sacrifice that for the sake of my husband or wife or children or whoever it is that you have to sacrifice for in your family? So there's going to be these conflicts. And you see, Ruth was in a similar position to this. It may not seem like it at first. I'm going to kind of walk through what's going on here and what was going on in chapter 2, and we'll kind of see this. So right away in verse 1, we see that Naomi, she's got a plan for all this stuff. So in chapter 2, if you remember back, since we did it out of order, it's been a couple weeks now, but if you remember that Naomi tells Ruth, when she finds out that she's been working on Boaz's field and that Boaz is taking care of her, she reveals to Ruth that Boaz is a redeemer. And we talked about last week about the Levirate marriage laws and how that all ties together. And so she formulates this plan. So in verse 1, she tells Ruth what she needs to do is she needs to go out. There, Boaz and everybody else is going to be at the threshing floor. Ruth needs to go down there. She needs to make herself look nice. You know, she needs to bathe. She needs to put on perfume, you know, make herself look really good, presentable, smell good, all that kind of stuff. She needs to go down to the threshing floor, and she needs to present herself to Boaz. And the reason that she needed to do this, and the reason that this redeemer was so important, that Naomi had this idea, and I talked about it before a couple weeks ago, is that for a woman at this time in Israel, if you were a widow, you were destined to be poor. And so what Rob read for us is talks about taking care of the widows. And this was something even in the New Testament church that was important to do. And there was a widow, she was going to be poor because the men in society were the ones who could go out and that provided for the family. And so if you were a widow and you lost your husband, you couldn't just go out and, you know, work at McDonald's or get a job and provide for the family. You were going to be destitute and you were going to have to be dependent on the charity of others, or wait until your son became of age, if he's not of age already, to provide for you. So if you don't have sons, like Ruth and Naomi didn't anymore, and you are a widow, then you're in trouble. And so Ruth was dependent on Boaz being kind to her, and she went out and worked in the field. And so Naomi's plan is, okay, if Boaz redeems Ruth, marries Ruth, then Ruth has that financial security and could have a son and then have financial security even after Boaz died. And not only that, but the family name would continue. So that's why this is important. This is Naomi's grand plan when she learns that Boaz is a redeemer and that he's looking after Ruth. Now, the plan is she goes down there, she presents herself after she smells good and looks good, and she is to uncover Boaz's feet and lie down there. Now, that seems kind of weird to us, and I'll kind of talk about that in a minute, what that was, but that's her plan. Now, another thing, there's been a period of time that has elapsed between Ruth chapter 2 and Ruth chapter 3, probably several weeks, because remember, in Ruth chapter 2, Ruth is harvesting the barley out in the field, and at this point, it's all harvested, right? So that they're at the threshing floor, what they would do is they'd take all of their harvest, all of their crop, and they would throw it up in the wind at this place, usually up on a hill where the wind could get to it. The chaff would blow away, and then the grain would fall, and you'd have a pile. And then what they would do is, if that was your crop, you would go out and you would sleep with the barley, with the grain, because you didn't want animals coming and taking your crop and running away with it. Those of you who've had gardens, you hopefully haven't gone to the extreme of sleeping out in your garden, right? But you probably know that there are rabbits and there are deer, and you have animals that come and they will borrow liberally from your garden, right? And so same thing here. And not only that, but remember, this is the time of the judges, and so you had to worry about other nations, other people coming and stealing the crop as well. So what you do is you would go and you would sleep out and guard your harvest, your crop. And another thing I'll kind of tell you about, because it's going to become relevant in a moment here, but sometimes, again, this was the time of the judges, so not a righteous time in Israel, but prostitutes would frequently know that men were sleeping by their grain, and so they would take advantage of that. The men are away from home, they're out in the field, and so they would go down and do things that they shouldn't do, and the men would be happy about that and all that kind of stuff. So this is something that would happen. So Ruth obeyed all that Naomi instructed her to do, and so she makes herself presentable, and she goes down, and Boaz ate and drank and was happy, and he went to sleep by his grain. Then in verse 7, Ruth came secretly and uncovered his feet and lay down. Now, what's that mean and what's going on? Well, there's lots of debate about this, and there's debate about other things that I present, and I don't feel the need to go into all the different options and all that kind of stuff, but I'm going to present something that I don't agree with, an interpretation, because it's alive and well in even evangelical churches. I was taught this in undergrad, what's going on here with uncovering the feet, and so I don't agree with it, but you're probably going to hear this, so I want you to know this is an option and why I don't believe that this is what's going on. So some take, because the language of uncovering someone's feet in Hebrew can be a euphemism for undressing somebody from the waist down. So some people take this as what's going on here. So remember the whole prostitute thing. So some people think Ruth, and this is an evangelical church too, some people think that Ruth went down to the threshing floor, Boaz got drunk, right? So it says he ate and drank and was happy and lay down. So Boaz got drunk, lay down. Ruth went down, undressed Boaz, did something sexual, and that's what happened here. And Boaz is surprised and all that kind of stuff, much like what would happen with a prostitute. So that's alive and well, and that's what they think is going on here with this uncovering of the feet. Now, I don't take this at all. That's what's going on. Here's why. There's several reasons. First, the Hebrew word for feet here is a little bit different word than the word that is used as a euphemism elsewhere in Scripture. So there's different words for feet in Hebrew. This is not the one that is usually used as a euphemism elsewhere in Hebrew Scripture. But not only that, but nothing in the broader context outside of this little episode here implies that this is what happened, right? So throughout Scripture, we see if Ruth did that, that would clearly be a sin, right? Nowhere in this story, nowhere in this chapter is it presented that Boaz and Ruth did something sinful. Not only that, but their characters, how they are presented, both Ruth and Boaz are very righteous people. And so Boaz, his response when he rolls over in a surprise to find Ruth there, he says, when she asks if he would redeem her, he says, this last kindness is greater than the first kindness that you showed to Naomi. And I don't think that would be his reaction if she was doing something inappropriate, that he says, oh man, you are such a righteous lady, and you know, just doing just what the prostitutes do, and you know, you're so righteous and all that stuff, that it doesn't fit. So I don't think that's what's going on here. So if you hear that's they're going to make complex arguments about the Hebrew, and if you look at the very immediate context, maybe it looks like that, but that I don't think that's what's going on at all. So I don't think anything sexual, I don't think anything inappropriate happened here. I do think maybe it's a bit scandalous in their culture, right? You have a woman come down in the night and she lays down secretly. They had a more conservative culture than us. I think the uncovering the feet is literally uncovering the feet, and maybe part of the shins and all that, which that could be a little bit scandalous in their culture, but nothing that is sexually inappropriate, okay, that's going on. So She does ask Boaz if he would redeem her. And this is no small question, right? This is a big deal. And she does this in the middle of the night, I believe, and Naomi has her do this in the middle of the night so that Boaz then can refuse if he wants to, and there's no shame. It's not that she goes in the middle of the city and says, hey, Boaz, can you do this? And not only that, but remember, there's a redeemer who is nearer than Ruth. And so you kind of got to factor that in, and whether you want to disgrace him or whether you want to include him and all that kind of stuff. And we saw how that all turns out in Ruth chapter 4. So she does this privately for a reason, and for Boaz's reputation and for Ruth's if Boaz doesn't want to redeem her. And so Boaz agrees to marry her. He says, I'm going to make sure this happens as long as there's a redeemer that's nearer than me, that's closer in relation to me. If he doesn't redeem you, I'm going to make sure this happens. I'm going to take care of you. And in verse 10, like I said before, he blesses her for doing what she's done and not for pursuing younger men. And I mentioned this last week, but this is where we see it here in verse 10 of chapter 3, that Ruth, so I kind of had that digression about the uncovering feet stuff, but Ruth really sacrificed a lot of her own desires, her own dreams, for the sake of Naomi. So, see, she well could have gone after younger men, because remember, Boaz is quite a bit older than Ruth by quite a few years. And again, I mentioned this last week, but we don't know what he looked like. He may have been, you know, we kind of tend to romanticize things, and he may have been a hunk, maybe one of those guys with the salty gray and pepper. Salt and pepper hair, right? Gray in there. And everybody swoons when he goes out to the field and all that kind of stuff. And maybe, or maybe he was, you know, partly balding and kind of overweight. And, you know, you don't tend to get better looking when you get older, right? He's a lot older than she is. But Ruth didn't go after the younger men. She could have pursued somebody that was better looking for her. She could have stayed in Moab and gone after people in her own culture where she had her own support network. Because remember, she's grieving as well. Just as Naomi, and Ruth focuses a lot on Naomi's bitterness and despair, but Ruth has lost her own husband. And so she's grieving, she's despairing, and she's left all of her support system, her whole family, all of her friends back in Moab, and she's come to a new land with Naomi, her mother-in-law, who's in her own depression and grief, and everything that she does is for the sake of Naomi. She's putting aside her own desires, her own wants. She's not pursuing a relationship that would be nice for her, or that she could have a husband who would live just as long as she did. Remember, if she's marrying Boaz, and Boaz is quite a bit older than her, and especially at this time, men tended to die way earlier than women, then she may lose another husband while she's still fairly young. And so she's doing all of this for the sake of Naomi and out of love. She's denying herself for Naomi. Now, we also have our own dreams and desires that our family interferes with, right? It's not that they intentionally try to ruin our hopes and desires, or that, you know, I don't want to, for those of you who aren't married, I'm not trying to present, you know, marriage and family life as something that's just miserable, because it's not. But inevitably, there's going to be times where if you're living with somebody else, their desires, their needs are going to interfere with what you want. So it could be something small, like let's say, you know, you get up early in the morning and you're ready to do your devotions and have a nice quiet start to the day, maybe watch the news or read a little bit, you know, have some me time at the beginning of the day, and then one of your young children wakes up and they got a fever and are throwing up, and you got to run in and deal with that, and your morning is completely gone, no time to yourself, then you got to deal with that the rest of the day and go to work and figure out, you know, if there's going to be a babysitter and all that stuff. Everything's into chaos. Most of you have been there before, but your own desires are kind of thrown under the bus when somebody else has a need. Or maybe it's something bigger. Maybe it's you've always dreamt of living at a certain income level. You have a certain car that you've picked out. You've had a certain house with a certain number of bedrooms that you've always wanted. And yet your spouse and maybe your job are not at that level to live at that standard of living. And so you've got to either decide, do I let this dream go, or do I leave my spouse and I pursue somebody that can give me what I want? Are you going to pursue your dream, or are you going to live with your spouse? Or maybe it's something like your spouse gets a dream job that they've always wanted and it's out in another state, And your dream has always been to live close to your family. And so somebody's dream's got to be sacrificed. You're either going to have to go off and pursue the dream job, or you're going to have to live near family. Or maybe it's something like your spouse gets sick with a degenerative disease, and you're going to have to take care of them or a child for the rest of your life. And so instantly, all of your hopes and dreams for the future, what you want, has got to go down the toilet. It's gone. You've got to take care of them. Or you could decide, you know, this is my spouse. I don't want them to die, certainly. I want them to get the care they need so I can pay, send them to a home, and I'll leave them and I will pursue somebody who can give me what I want and my own desires. We always have this choice where you've got your own personal desires, your own personal dreams, and then inevitably in a family, at either a small level, like somebody getting sick and you don't have a morning to yourself, or at a large level, you're going to have a conflict where you're going to have to pursue either your dream or your own happiness or your family. And here's the reality, though, and this is the solution that I have. When a family truly loves and sacrifices for one another, after the example of Jesus, the family is happy and there's joy in the family. If a family truly loves and sacrifices for one another after the example of Jesus, there's happiness. There's happiness in the family. Not that everything is great, not that sacrifices don't hurt, not that you're not irritated when your mourning to yourself is ruined by somebody getting sick, or you have to take care of somebody, or somebody needs a drink of water, or somebody wet the bed, and hopefully it's not your spouse that wet the bed, right? But life is happy, and there's joy there. And in this chapter, we see Naomi doing this and sacrificing some for Ruth. So sometimes we, and sometimes I in the sermon, have kind of presented Naomi in a more negative light with her bitterness. And that's not all the case. She's certainly bitter and she's certainly grieving. But Naomi was concerned for Ruth and her future. In verse 1 here in this chapter, she's seeking rest and security for Ruth. And she benefits by this too. But it's not completely selfish. She is worried about Ruth. She doesn't want Ruth to have to be working hand and foot in whoever's field, risking her own personal safety every day of every year to take care of her mother-in-law. Rather, she wants her to have security and have a family and all of that too. So she makes this plan for the sake of Ruth, and Ruth listens to her and follows this plan. And this was to ensure that Ruth would have that family. We talked about the Levirate marriage laws, and if you missed last week and that kind of confuses you, why would you want to marry a relative and all that kind of stuff? Deuteronomy chapter 25, verses 5 through 6 is where you find that. I'm not going to read it today, but if you want to flip there, you can take a look at that if you missed that. But that was a law in Israel so that the family line could continue, and in order to provide for widows and for families who are destitute, who have lost the husband, who have lost the men in the family, they could have this as kind of a security blanket, a social security blanket. Now, this love went both ways. So not only was Naomi sacrificing for Ruth, and by the way, remember that Naomi was concerned for both Orpah and Ruth at the beginning and wanted them to go back to their own home in Moab. She said, you know, let me go to Israel. You guys go home. You remarry, find somebody else, start over. And she wanted that, not just because she was throwing a self-pity party and, you know, like, oh, well, don't care about me, and, you know, really wanting them to care about her, but she was concerned about her daughters-in-law. And Ruth decided to follow her and love her. And so Ruth sacrificed a lot for Naomi. Again, she left everything she knew in Moab. She came and she worked, risking her own personal safety in a foreign land for the sake of Naomi. And in chapter 3, again, we see that she makes another sacrifice in marrying Boaz. She's not pursuing anybody else, but she's going to marry into this family so that the family line can continue and that Naomi can also be taken care of. Because she could have decided, you know what, Naomi, my mother-in-law, she's a sweet lady, but I got to pursue my own hopes and dreams. I've got to pursue my own happiness, because after all, who's going to look after me if I don't pursue these hopes and dreams? So tough luck, Naomi. I'm going to go after somebody else. I'm going back to Moab. I'm going to go do something else. And yet she doesn't do that. She lives lovingly and self-sacrificially for the sake of her mother-in-law. And as we saw last week, right, this all worked out. Boaz married Ruth, and everything worked out well, and they were blessed by God because of her loving, loyal, self-sacrificial love. And Boaz presented this kind of loving, self-sacrificial love as well. And so our application for today is this. Sacrifice for your family out of love. Sacrifice for the sake of your family. Now, this could be your parents, this could be your children, this could be your brothers and sisters, now, this could be extended family, but you need to sacrifice for your family out of love. And to love others well means that you're going to have to inconvenience yourself. It's just the unfortunate reality of our sin-fallen world and our sin nature that's so self-focused. To love others well, you've got to get past that self-focus, and it's going to cost you something. It's going to sacrifice something, whether it's a quiet morning to yourself or something bigger than that. So the answer that to the question that I asked at the beginning of the sermon is how much of our own happiness and how much of our own dreams do we need to sacrifice for the sake of our family is as much as is required. It may be everything. It may be a little bit. It may be that we can pursue some of our hopes and dreams, and that's just fine, and also love our family well. And it could mean that, depending on the circumstances of the family, that all of those things have to go away, and you've got to love your family and adapt and change your hopes and your dreams. So if you're in a situation, let's say, where your spouse gets a chronic illness, again, everything's out the window, and you've got to adapt your hopes and dreams and take care of them and love them well and love self-sacrificially for their sake. And you're not going to be going off and, you know, being a CEO of a company or whatever your dream is. You've got to take care of them at home. And there's a reality that many of us don't see a lot of times is that giving up, and it's completely countercultural, is that giving up some of our own personal happiness doesn't mean that we're destined to live an unhappy, miserable life, right? If you're loving somebody as you ought to, and we were created to love self-sacrificially, that's what Adam and Eve were made to do, that's what we're made to do, is love one another completely self-sacrificially, not selfishly, but for the sake of the other person, then that leads us to live blessed and happy lives. Not that everything's great, not that we have all the money in the world, not that, you know, there's no problems, not that it's not hard to love other people, but we live blessed lives and we have joy-filled lives because remember, one of the fruits of the Holy Spirit is joy. And if we're living in obedience to God, loving others as we ought to, especially our own family, and we saw in our scripture reading from 1 Timothy that we as Christians are called to love and sacrifice for our families and provide for them. If we don't, we're worse than an unbeliever. That is our primary ministry as individuals, is to take care of our families. And so if we do that well, even if it comes at great sacrifice to us, even if we have to sacrifice our dreams and our hopes, then we're obeying Christ, and that fruit of joy is going to be manifest in our lives. Loving others is what we were created to do. It's not that we have to live this life of misery and where we're just never happy. You can be happy and love self-sacrificially. And there's this idea out there that you have in culture, kind of with this self-care idea is, you know, if I don't look after myself, who is? Who's going to look after me? And again, if you have a family that is, everybody is loving one another self-sacrificially as they ought to, your needs are going to be met. Your husband, your wife, your kids, whoever, they're going to be concerned about you and make sure you get what you need. You don't have to worry about yourself. It's not this survival mentality where it's like, boy, if I don't take care of myself, I'm never going to get anything. That's not the way that we need to live. We need to live open-handed, loving for the sake of others, and trust that God will provide what we need. God, if we're running low on energy and we haven't slept in a couple days and we still have things that we have to do, God will give us the energy. God will provide what we need to love our family well. We need to trust Him in that. And we need to trust that He will provide and that our family will love us well. And so my problem a lot of times with the self-care idea that our culture has is again, like I said before, a lot of husbands, a lot of wives neglect their family and their children for the sake of self-care. They say, oh, you know, mommy or daddy needs a self-care moment. We need some self-care time. Let me just go lock myself in my room. You guys take care of yourselves. I don't care what you do. I need some self-care time. Well, sometimes that's not good. Sometimes that's neglecting your family. Sometimes that's self-centeredness. So you need to be careful and you need to be discerning where that line is between self-care and self-centeredness. So make sure you're loving and sacrificing for your family well. It's going to take self-sacrifice because when you have a family, there's going to be times, again, where your own interests, your own dreams, your own desires, your own happiness is going to come in conflict with what they need and what they want and what they desire. And there's going to have to be some compromise. Somebody's going to have to give up. And to love them well, you're going to have to sacrifice some of your own happiness and desires. Maybe not everything, maybe more than what you want, but that's what we're called to do. And so we need to live self-sacrificial loving lives, just like Ruth did, just like Boaz did, just like we see Naomi do at times here in the story of Ruth. And I may have shared this story with you before, but when I was in Dallas and going to church down there, there was a married couple, and the wife in this couple had MS. She had multiple sclerosis, and she had had that since very early on in their marriage. And so it's a degenerative disease, and so when I knew them, they had been married for decades, and she was health-wise relegated to a wheelchair, and she could only move her head a little bit, and she could talk, she had to labor really hard to talk, to speak, and so you had to be very patient and wait for her to finish speaking. But her husband had to take care of her, had to dress her, had to do everything for her. And when she got that diagnosis, and especially as her illness progressed, he had to throw all of his hopes and dreams by the wayside. And no longer could he really put more work into his career because he needed a bunch of hours off to be able to take care of his wife. They couldn't really do vacations where they went really far away and, you know, do the dream vacations and all that kind of stuff. They needed to stay home. She couldn't go on an airplane, all that kind of stuff. And you would think, okay, man, he must be kind of bitter about this. If you looked at his life, maybe he's bitter at God about this. Maybe he's bitter at his wife about this. Maybe she's bitter because she's suffering. And there wasn't any of that when I knew them. They were joyful. They were happy. Now, they were suffering, and they would give just about anything for her to get healthy again. And we would pray for them. They would regularly admit that it was hard to deal with that, hard for him to see her suffer, hard for her to suffer. But there was a lot of joy and there was happiness, and they loved each other and they served one another well. And I would see them. I would go to this giant mall in Dallas, one of those malls where it's like your odds of running into somebody you know, even if you knew they were there, are really small, because it's like trying to find two people in 100,000 people. And I would see them there sometimes on a date night on a weekend. And she would be in her wheelchair, and he'd be pushing her along, and they'd just be so happy to be out together. And there was just that joy, and they loved the Lord. And it wasn't this miserable kind of shriveled up life where he was like, you know, I just wish I had my life back, and my wife and this illness have ruined my life. And she thinks, you know, I wish I had my life back, and my life is ruined. I've had to sacrifice everything. They were suffering, but they had this joy. And it was because they, the best they could, they loved each other and they sacrificed for each other. And especially the husband, he sacrificed more than I think even Boaz did in our story here, and more than Ruth did for the sake of his wife. All because he was loving her the way he knew that Jesus loved him. And he had that joy. He had that happiness. It doesn't have to be a miserable life. And so that's the way that we need to love our families. That's kind of how I want to close this story of Ruth. And again, it's not just husband and wife, but it's your children and extended family as well. We need to love like Boaz. We need to love like Ruth, where it's this complete self-sacrificial, I'm going to love them, even if they're not being nice to me in this moment, or even if I'm not getting what I want, or even if I have to deny myself something, I'm going to love them as I should for their sake and for their benefit. So I hope you hear that coming from the story of Ruth as we close this book. Let's close in prayer.